This week on the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast, we chat with Tanya Lawless and Lee Russell from Unpacked Dog Education and Training. With a strong background in dog behaviour and scent detection, they share how scent work can support the overall well-being of our dogs. From managing prey drive to using sniffing games and behavioural consults, this episode is packed with tips for building focus, reducing stress, and enriching your dog's life. Whether you have a working therapy dog or you just want to try something new with your pet dog at home, this episode is for you. All right, everyone, welcome back to the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. I'm Max, the social media manager for Therapy Dogs Australia, and with me is Sam King, the owner of Therapy Dogs Australia. How's it going, hello. Sam?
Good, thank you, Max. Hello, everybody.
Hello, hello. And today we have the lovely Tanya Lawless and Lee Russell with us on the podcast with Unpacked Dog Training. How are you guys?
Good.
Yeah, really good. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for joining us. We're really excited for this one. It's going to be a good one. How about just to start off, Tanya, do you want to give the listeners a bit of information about yourself and then Lee?
Yep. So originally, I still am, I'm a zoologist. So I started an animal behaviour yonks ago, far too long ago. And I also owned a dog walking business in Sydney for 6 years, which was really successful. From that, I decided I wanted to get my dog training certificate and move more into dog training. So I did that, ran puppy schools and adolescent classes and things like that, and behavioural consults. Then I applied and got a job with Guide Dogs, New South Wales ACT, and I was the puppy development advisor for 5 years there. And we moved the puppy training, puppy raising program to the south coast of New South Wales. And we got 30 pups down there. So that was really amazing. So I do definitely have a background in the therapy space as well. While I was doing my dog training certificate, our trainers were also conservation detection dog trainers as well, Steve Austin. And I thought, oh, here's a way to marry up my zoology and conservation interests with dogs. So I just went out and bought myself an English Springer Spaniel.
She did.
just popped out.
No idea. Never had that breed before. Let's just go for it. And sort of learn, very quickly, sort of dropped myself in the deep end and sort of kept working towards it. That was my side project while I was still enjoying Guide Dogs, and then got an opportunity to work with an organisation who was working on the wind farms down here in Western Victoria. I grew up in Melbourne, so we discussed it, talked about it, and thought, why don't we move back to Victoria, because Lee had been in Victoria too previously. Moved down here, and we had already started Unpacked Dog Education and Training in New South Wales, but we brought it with us. And we also found that because scent is such a huge thing for us, that nobody in the, well, we're in Ballarat, and we found that not many trainers, there was one that was doing some scent work down here. So we sort of started there, and we've been here for 2 years.
Fantastic.
Wow.
So you guys are based in Ballarat.
We're based in Ballarat.
So my background is somewhat different to Tanya's. I actually started my career in the hospitality business. So I've run restaurants. I was a chef. I did that for 20, 25 years, again, showing my age. and I moved to the south coast of New South Wales in probably the mid-2000s and decided I didn't want to continue doing chefing. I didn't want to continue doing hospitality. And I'd always wanted to work with dogs, with animals. I grew up in a town of 300 people, so I was that typical country kid surrounded by animals, always wanted to, was always working with animals. So I actually managed within 2 months of moving to the South Coast to get a job with the RSPCA. So I spent 5 years working with dogs, particularly from a behavioural point of view with the RSPCA. So I work a lot with anxious dogs, reactive dogs, maltreated dogs. So I kind of come from that area. I walked away from that for a few years. As you can probably understand, it was quite heartbreaking, the type of work that I did in that space. And I came back to it actually through Guide Dogs. So I lost my wolfhound, who was my heart and soul dog, and a very good friend of mine who also happened to have been my vet said, do your Guide Dogs, it'll get you back into the training space of what you love, and you can then raise a guide dog and move from there. That guide dog pup is now 6 years old and lives on our couch. So, but has turned into, so he went out, he had health issues that took him out of the program as a one-year-old dog. And we put him on scent, you know, pretty much put him onto scent the day he was signed over to me. And now a detection dog with us. He's a fabulous, fabulous resource for my behavioral work that I do because he's got that beautiful nature of a Labrador that is able to pretty much take on everything. And he's early guide dog training. So he's early training in having to be around other dogs in a space, being, you know, one of the hardest things with labs, as you probably know, is being able to actually get them to not be quite so social in a place where they actually need to work. So so yeah, I came back to training that way. And in 2021 we formed Unpacked.
Yep.
So we were quite selective away. Like, so we're Unpacked Dog Education and Training, and we purposely put education into the first part of our name rather than training, because that's what we're the most passionate about.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Is actually educating people about their dogs, about their dog's behavior, rather than the word of training. So that's both. And we've successfully, as Tanya mentioned, brought it down to the south, to Ballarat 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's been fabulous.
So, and it's been a wonderful move for us down here. So
amazing.
Fantastic. I was maybe, I mean, I think most people are going to know what scent detection is, but can you guys give the listeners a bit of an idea of what we're talking about when we say scent detection?
Yeah, so you can think of the traditional scent detection roles, you know, the police and army and things like that, bomb detection, drug detection, the dogs at the biosecurity, all that stuff as well. And then you've got conservation detection dogs, who there's a range of things they can do. So in terms of scent detection with dogs, the sky's the limit. So you've now in the last few years seen dogs that can detect COVID and different diseases and things like that. Conservation detection is for dogs that can work in sort of endangered species or pest species, detecting those, or biosecurity. You've probably seen some things of dogs maybe in Lord Howe Island sort of detecting rats and things that are coming to the area.
There was a documentary, Bear, the koala dog, you may have seen after the New South Wales fires.
Of course. No, you're right. Yes.
He was trained to detect live koalas. So he wasn't working on scat. He was working on live fur to detect the injured, hurt koalas in that space.
That's amazing.
Other part of that is what we've got into is monitoring and surveying for different animals. So down here in Western Victoria, there are lots of wind farms. So myself and Jarrah, our middle child. we work and do bird and bat mortality surveys on the wind farms. So when a wind farm is established, they need to monitor the impacts of the environment. So birds and bats actually unfortunately hit the turbines and survey and record all those. So there's data for the government, and they can do some work on curtailment. So that's our major thing at the moment.
That's pretty incredible. Is that a new thing?
Fairly new. So there's been some companies that have been doing it for quite some time, but it's, and especially now in the next, say, 5 years or so, the renewable space, there's going to be a lot more wind farms. So there's going to be probably heaps of work to make sure we're monitoring correctly.
So dogs being used in conservation has probably been around for about 10 years or so in the UK. They do things like hedgehog studies and water vole, a few things. We've got friends in the UK who do it. We've got friends in the US who do it. But it's a relatively new space here in Australia. Mm. And just as Tanya mentioned, as our renewable sector is advancing, so is the understanding of the use of dogs is a phenomenal tool. Because a dog using their nose is a no-brainer.
Is that is there like a government agency that's like, let's train the dogs for this stuff, or is it private companies
it's
like you guys?
Mostly private that will actually do it, but it is a government requirement. So it's written into the plans when a wind farm's first going in, that at least for the first 2 years of post-operation construction, that they need to monitor the impacts of the wind farm. So that's part of the whole.
And it's become easier. People are starting to realise that it's a lot quicker to do with a dog than it is to do with humans. So a human can do a survey, say, in 3 hours, that a dog can do in 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Because they're using their nose, whereas humans are using their eyes, and we're renowned that some of them aren't, we're not very good with our eyes.
Three out of four of us here are wearing glasses.
Oh my goodness, that's incredible.
It's really fascinating, isn't it? Because you can train a dog on any odor, pretty much. Yeah. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fascinating. That's such a, I'm going to say, like an underused, I don't know if that's true or not, I'm just saying that, but it seems like it's just crazy not to be making the absolute most out of that in every single possible circumstance that you could apply.
And you can train a dog on multiple odors. You don't, if you've got one dog on a particular odor, that doesn't have to only be the odor that dog's on. So you can train dogs on multiple odors.
Yeah.
And in our world, in the conservation space, it's just that you try not to put them onto an odor that might clash.
Mm-hmm. Just because every odor that they ever learn, they will always know. So
it
might be if there's lots of that, if all the species they know are occur in that particular area, they're going to indicate on everything. So it's going to take a very long time. You might not know exactly which one they're going for.
So, for example, if you were going to train that dog on koala fur, that would not be that good if you trained them on scat, because they'll indicate on scat everywhere.
Depends what you're looking for. It depends what you're looking for. If you want the live koala, I mean, that could also indicate live koala, so you might be able to differentiate
between
fresher scat to older scat. It's just, it's amazing. Like, it's
one of the best examples is probably if you're out on a wind farm and you're looking for bird and bat mortality. So we train on bird and bat carcass to then not train that same dog onto, say, a predator scat. So say or a wild cat or feral cat, because they're everywhere.
Yeah.
So, and they're going to indicate on that. It's in their bank of odors. So,
and they probably might have been trying to eat the bird.
Yeah.
Fox.
Yeah, they're probably scavenging on the
bird. Yeah. Gross. Cool.
Gross, but reality.
I watched my border collie, it's just skip forward 30 seconds, people, if you don't like this kind of stuff. I watched my border collie see a bird, like a pigeon, hit the water tank and like drop dead, and then he just ate the whole thing.
Oh my goodness.
Because that's the thing, dogs are predators, and we always have
a dog.
Regardless of how much they live in our houses and how much they've got a prey drive, and they're predators. So,
and this is like the sweetest, like when would tell you that one of my dogs ate a bird, you would not think it was him. Like, he is the sweetest, most gentle, kindest.
Do you go over and give you a kiss afterwards?
He's such a gentleman. Well, see, I was in the arena with horses, so I couldn't immediately like remove it, you know? So I was like, and then I was like, do I care really if he eats it? It's pretty fresh, you know? Yeah. So then I just let him eat it.
That's also an important point in terms of for conservation detection dogs. The number, everyone, you know, scent work, when we'll talk about the classes that we run as well, but scent work is brilliant and all dogs can do it. Just about every dog can do it, but not every dog can be a conservation detection dog. Because number one, they cannot chase wildlife. So, and that knocks out a lot of dogs, So we have to spend a lot of time very, very early managing that prey drive. And if we have a dog that's off the charts with a huge prey drive, they will not make it. If their natural instinct is to hunt and chase wildlife, imagine, you know, dogs on an endangered species and it's the last one of its kind, and so it's really important. That's where everyone says, could my dog do it? It's like, possibly.
So when it comes to us for training our scent detection dogs, as Tony said, we'll talk about the classes we do with pet dogs and the behavioral work we do with scent as well, but the training of the scent takes no time at all. Absolutely no time. You can imprint a dog to scent within 15 to 20 minutes if they know what they're doing and know the game. But it's the other stuff.
Yeah.
The is safety precautions of not chasing wildlife, not of knowing when to stop when you're told to stop. We've got to be aware of when we're in the environment. We're dealing with snakes. We're in Australia. That's one of our biggest things out there, depending upon, you know, bushland, whatever you're in. We live with snakes. So being able to protect our dogs as well as everything else. And we use Springer Spaniels and a Labrador, but we use Springer Spaniels, and they were bred to flush birds. You know, we started work with our girls very, very early sit next to the bird feeder, don't interact with the birds. Sit next to the bird feeder, don't interact with the birds. That doesn't mean that if we're out for a walk, that they see a bird and go, hello, instinct.
Yeah.
we come into command over instinct in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely see a difference in we've got a Staffy and my Labrador, and the prey drive in the Staffy is totally different. It is and I can tell her, like, stop doing that. But it's still the first idea in her head in every situation that presents is prey drive. Whereas, like, the other dog, like, I've got a livestock guardian dog that's an Anatolian Shepherd. I've got a Border Collie and a Labrador. Yeah. It's probably, like, the third or fourth idea. Like, and that my livestock guardian dog, it's supposed to be, like, the 10th idea, but she's like... it's probably the third. We're being realistic. She's very much in training. But, yeah, it's wild, like, to see just how... So. I've had clients here this morning, and one of the kids, we were watering the garden. I do farm-based animal assisted therapy. So anyway, we're watering the garden while we're talking about all her life events. And the dogs like to play with the water. My old dog who died really loved it, but my Border Collie loves it as well. And so she's like, oh, can I play with the water with the dogs? My Border Collie, like the game for him, you can clearly see the herding instinct in the game for him. And she was like, oh, why won't, like, Penny, she's young, so she's just, like, spraying the dogs in the face. She's like, why won't, like, she's not doing it sort of thing. And I was like, oh, if you actually make the water go, like, this along the ground, so I'm just, like, sweeping the hose along the ground, she was instantly, like, I'm chasing that. And so we unlocked this, like, fun game that this girl could play. But you could see that Oliver, my Border Collie, was still very much doing the, like, I'm herding it. And then my Staffy's like, chase. It's prey.
That's it.
It's just like, I can imagine. And then my Labrador Nala is just walking around at the bath. Like, I don't know why everyone's volunteering for a bath. Like, you guys are so stupid.
Yeah. Having worked with a lot of Labradors.
Yeah. Don't get me started. But anyway. No, great in so many things.
But this is, we talk about this a lot with classes that we do, because we don't just run scent classes. We run adolescent classes, which is a lot of trainers don't do because it's really hard.
It is hard,
But we always talk about dog groups and what your dog was bred to do. Because it's so important to understand what those instincts of your dog are, because they're going to come out.
Yeah.
And they're going to come out probably at the wrong time, but knowing how to meet those needs within a safe environment, within a play environment, so as, you know, they don't actually become destructive and start herding the children into a corner. And, you know, the amount of phone calls or emails we get about the blue heelers and nipping the ankles of their kids. The kids do, they squeal, and the blue heeler goes, no, we're going to fix that.
Yeah. Put a stop to that. I don't know why people are complaining.
Zero tolerance policy.
Sounds like I need to get myself a blue heeler. Joking, guys.
we were a little terrified when Bluey came out, the cartoon. I thought, uh-oh, because I've had three heelers myself. Mm. And I thought, oh, no, this is not the best family dog. Let's not think they're a cartoon, shall we? Sorry.
But as we predicted, the increase of Bluey.
Did you?
Oh, that's so interesting.
And they're all called Bluey or Bingo.
People are funny, hey? Okay, cool. So we've talked about, so you guys are doing, do you both do conservation stuff with your dogs?
I am coming into it, and I do a lot of the training of our dogs with Tanya. But when we moved down here, I was actually only 2 months post a double knee replacement.
Oh my goodness.
I really feel like walking 16 kilometers a day on a wind farm.
Is it really necessary to replace both knees at the same time?
Apparently was, according to my surgeon. And even though those probably the first 6 months were a living hell on earth, I'm now two and a bit years post, and it's the best thing I ever did.
Her knees are better than mine, that's for sure.
So I think we are planned for me to come onto the wind farm, and we'll be doing, you know, we need another dog.
Yeah.
But we there are definite plans, but I do most of the back house training stuff, and I do all of Unpack's behavioural consults. So mm-hmm. I do a lot of one-on-one stuff with lots of people, and I use scent in all of that.
I was just going to ask that. You're reading my mind. Crazy. I was literally like, Sam, next, say, do you use scent work in your behavioural consults? And then you just said it. Can you just tell us?
I do use scent in our behavioural consults.
Amazing. Can you talk to us about that? That's what people are going to be interested in. People listening probably like, okay, I get it, conservation stuff, interesting. But what we really want to talk about is, how does scent work, nose work, all this, you know, work with the dog's nose on odours, how can people make use of that, and how can people enrich their dogs' lives? How can they satiate them? How is it useful for people?
I think one of the things that we see so much, and this is probably how we ended up meeting you guys, was that when we do a scent class, so when we run a 4-week scent class, we can have dogs that walk into that class on week one that are terrified. They don't mm-hmm. want to be around any other dog, which we never have. They never come in contact with another dog. And mm-hmm. they also can be quite reactive to people. By week four, they're usually asking for a butt scratch or mm-hmm. a scratch, or they're usually. So putting a, so what I use when I'm doing, I'll let Tanya talk to the classes, but what I do in behavioral consults, if I'm working with a reactive dog, with a anxious dog, with a nervous dog, is getting a dog's nose on the ground and sniffing and having, that gives them a massive dopamine hit. So it's that, and it becomes a really salient activity for them to do. So I've got so many examples I could use, but what it's about is taking that dog's interest or obsession with something else and bringing it to a positive environment. So, and then what I do, especially if I've got reactive dogs, so I'll use that as an example. I've got reactive dogs that are reactive to dogs outside the house, anything outside, you know, what the world basically. Mm-hmm. The first thing that I do in any consult with a dog like that is to say, stop taking them out. Now that's a big thing for a lot of people. They go, no, but I have to walk my dog. I have to walk. No, you don't.
You really don't. Yeah.
You really don't. If your dog is scared of the world and aversive to the world, you don't need to take it out into the world.
We'll and if you're and if you are scared of the world, and if you're scared of the other dogs,
and it becomes this lovely little catch-22 little feedback loop where your dog's scared, so you get scared, so then your dog goes, why are we scared? And then you keep going round and round in circles. So the best thing for everybody is to stay at home, and just let's enrich your dog's life in the house and in your home environment. So the one of the things I'm thinking, I'm working with a wolfhound at the moment who's the most gorgeous dog, but he doesn't like the world. He's a rescue dog. He's scared. But we've got him doing, so things like scatter feeding, throwing food out into the yard, letting them, you know, hunt for it. If they're toy driven, letting them go and find their toys, having little games and toys with toys or with food, you could start to not just hunt, do scatter feed. You could actually start hiding little specific treats around, getting them to go and actually look for that. So that also engages their seeking system, which all dogs also have, because it's part of their prey drive. Mm-hmm. So that you're seeking into their, and you know, again, I'll let Tanya talk to this. All dogs are different at which part of their prey drive drives mm-hmm. them the most. But for me, when I use it such as this, it's like, right, we start with that. We work with doing little pieces of that. And then what we can do is, once the dog understands the game of seeking, or of, you know, I'm going to scatter some food and your nose is going to go to the ground, we take that outside. So it might only start where we take it to the front lawn and we start to play outside whilst we're on a leave. And then we can take it onto walks. We see a dog start. I mean, this is where I do use my Labrador, is that we see a dog coming. The dog might start to get a little bit, you know, up watching, scatter the food on the ground, nose down, goes down on the ground. And a lot of the times what we find is the dog can walk past the other dog can walk past. So it's that type of activity to being able to actually distract the dog without doing the, no, don't do this, no, don't do that. It's a healthy activity. The dog's being flooded with dopamine and they love that game. But the first step is to get them loving that game.
Yeah, such a an amazing physical and mental activity for dogs. It's a no-brainer. You know, I mean, just try and take your dog for a walk down the street. Their world is their nose, you know, and once they get onto a scent, it can be hard to move them off it. And they just glean so much information out of what they're smelling. You know, what have they got? 300 million olfactory receptors compared to 6 million of ours. It's insane. That's how they see the world. But with the, as Lee said, with the dopamine hit, the rush of endorphins, it makes them feel really good. And so then it starts to build confidence. So it's just, it spirals. And even though we came to it from a conservation detection point, and then we thought, well, we'll try this. So it's not a traditional nose work class, because that's another type of sport you can do. We've brought it from the scent detection world, but even we thought we'll just play around with people and get their dogs onto odor. And it's been incredibly successful because we have a lot of fun. We have a lot of laughs as well. But it just, we've even been astounded as to see the behavioral change in such a short period of time. It's blown us away. It's been unexpected. We kind of knew it was always.
We knew the science behind it.
We knew the science behind it. I got into it with my reactive blue healer, as I always say. I don't think it's any other type, but and that was the only sport we could do. We originally did nose works because he didn't have to see other dogs. It was working well at the time. And I watched his life improve after he really started to engage his nose in a very focused way. It must have just, he was just lolling around with dopamine and endorphins and lowering cortisol levels. So it's just been amazing. And it's, again, how we got onto you guys was a student came and watched us and said, and watched two classes and said, I've actually never seen such a quick change in dogs' demeanors and confidence in such a short period of time.
I think confidence is the key in it as well. Yes, they're getting flooded with dopamine. Yes, we're lowering cortisol levels and, you know, we're giving them an amazingly salient activity that they want to keep doing. But when they start to come into something like our classes where we move on to putting them onto scent quite quickly, because that's what we do in the detection world. So we put them onto scent pretty much in week two. And by week four, and we're only doing this once a week, so it's literally four sessions. What we also encourage, though, is that people are working through the week with their dog, is that by week four, that dog can actually go, and we use truffle oil as a maintenance odor for our own dogs. So we use it for our pet dogs in our classes.
What do you mean by maintenance odor?
So for us, because we train our dogs on bird and bat carcass, we can't go randomly throwing out bird and bats to do little training sessions.
Yeah.
So
a training odor, really.
It's merely a training odor. We originally started doing truffle oil because we were going to train truffle dogs, and that rapidly moved into a completely different direction.
Might be a retirement.
Completely different.
Retirement plan. There's a lot less walking involved in truffles in truffle dogs. And so we just put truffle oil as being the odor that we use for all of our pet dogs.
Most dogs seem to like it.
It's not aversive. Some dogs find odors aversive, and you know that's also something you take into account.
Vinegar. You're training them on vinegar.
we have a really good friend who trained her. She's in the UK, and she actually trained her dog on King's curry powder.
Curry powder.
And was like,
actually. Oliver pulled that off my border collie pulled that off my bench once and got right into it, and I was
curry
powder. What is wrong with you? Yeah, because I was making, you know how you make those eggs and you like cut them in half,
yeah,
and then you make it delicious. Yeah, I was making them, and I left the thing out. Yeah. Oh yeah, chef, look at you.
Of course,
handy. I'm like, the eggs that are in half and delicious. Yeah, I couldn't believe it when he stole that. I was like, you're so silly. But yeah. He was right into it.
But what we were saying in terms of the class by the week four is it's not just all of the dopamine, and it's the confidence. Mm. They go out and they look for something, they find it, and they get rewarded. So you've got a quite timid dog who might walk into a class going, I'm too scared to walk away from my owner. I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to do anything. By week four, they pull them up the ramp. They're in the class, and we always do everything off lead unless there's a reason not to. Mm-hmm. And that dog will be out searching. We always have to make sure we've got the odor out, because that dog's out there looking, straight away. 10 meters ahead of their away from their handler. They're having a ball. And then when they find it, they get, and usually by week four, every single person in the class is invested in every single dog.
Yes.
So they'll get a massive, you know, a massive round of applause or a cheer. And
aww.
If you're a golden retriever or a Labrador, you usually then have to run back and just do your parade.
Do a lap. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Let me look at me. Or your water collie goes, be quiet. I've actually got work to do.
Yeah.
Oh, and we see personalities in them as well. Like, you know, we see lots of the personalities of each dog, and we've had things like reactive Labradors, like they exist and they are a really hard dog for owners because the world thinks a Labrador is supposed to be this happy-go-lucky dog. So everybody walks up to these labs and they don't like people. So there's one particular dog that we've had, Lucy, that's just, she's changed her world.
Yeah, incredible.
That's awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And she's bloody good at it.
She is.
Is scent detection, like the scent work and the games that you can do with your dogs, is it something that's like good to do when they've got a lot of energy to expect, like to get out? Or is it, can it also be a calming activity?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's
a great question. Either or.
So three things that naturally bring a dog down. So, you know, you think about arousal levels and there's an arousal loop. Basically, if a dog does a lot of high energy stuff and a lot of high arousal stuff, so chasing ball, you know, tug, et cetera, or anything, just going out for a walk, some dogs find, you know, they're up on their toes. It's really, really important, and sometimes people miss this, to bring those arousal levels down. So, you know, if the dog's been stuck in the sympathetic nervous system, you've got to do something to bring them to the parasympathetic. So, you know, like us, we're going to do yoga or meditation or something. Wine, no.
I was going to say, I might have a beer, maybe.
So it's really important. So scent work can do that. And that's the other benefit to it as well. So the three things that will naturally bring a dog down are sniffing, licking, and chewing, unless it's very vigorous chewing. So some dogs will be licking to self-soothe, to sort of bring themselves down. But sniffing is such a fantastic activity to bring a dog actually back into that parasympathetic and bring them down again and close that arousal loop. Like, it's so important to do that. Otherwise, they'll stay in that heightened state and possibly displace into something else and just be a bit manic.
It's like the ultimate mindfulness activity for a dog, because they have absolutely. To tune in. Tune in on an odor, tune out other odors. Absolutely. But when they're scenting, they're
and that's like one of our favorite sounds in the world.
Yeah,
it's the best, right? It's
focused
the
on
best.
And this happens in terms of just saying, you know, if a dog's highly aroused, a lot of the times what we don't think about is if we take our dog out for a walk, and I get this a lot with people who have working dogs. They take them out for a walk. They say, we did 6Ks and I come home and, you know, and I put him in the yard or I put him in the house, and then I go, you know, I go to do my work or I go to work and my dog's just still bouncing off the walls. It's because they're still sitting in the top of their arousal loop. Mm-hmm. We've just taken them out. They've got cortisol pumping. They're in their sympathetic system. They're looking. And then we go, okay, see ya. Mm-hmm. And we leave. And
yeah, so they've probably just been barked at by the dog next door. And then
when they rip their bed up, or when they decide to dig a hole big enough to, you know, bury three of their mates in. Like, they just that's what we, so, you know, but I often say, again, in behavioral situations, when you come home, do a scatter feed for your dog. Just grab, you know, a licky mat or a scatter feed, just to let that dog then close its arousal loop, and then they calm down and sleep. So the big thing we get after our scent classes is people going, my dog was asleep before we got out of the car.
All these photos, just passed out, you know. And that's a great activity too, because if you're time poor or something like that, if we haven't got time to do too much with our dogs, we just do a quick scent session, and it just wears them out. And the other thing too, about the arousal thing, if your dogs are up all the time, you've got the risk of kind of trigger stacking when you're out and about. If they've been doing a high arousal activity and then they are maybe feeling they're up and they maybe have a reactive sort of tendency, they're going to displace onto the next thing that they see, you know. So
That's something we forget with dog owners is we go out and we go, well, I've exercised the dog for 3 hours. I've taken the dog for 3 walks today. I've thrown the ball. I've done this. But it's all physical activity. And, yes, physical activity, as for all of us and all mammals, is essential. but we also need to work that brain.
Yeah.
And we need to be able to engage that brain. And they are phenomenally intelligent creatures. Mm. And we underestimate them a lot. To be able to actually get them looking and using, trying, like, and this is where even things like puzzle toys and, you know, licky mats, yep, and that type of thing, of being able to engage your dog's brain, they will then rest, and rest is so vitally important for them.
Well, that would be very useful then for our therapy dogs decompression, like we've talked about before, at the end of sessions or middle of the day.
The scent part of the puzzle toys is like, it's a big part of it. That's the only way that the dog knows that all the compartments are empty. The compartments are, by the nature of some of my toys, they can't all be open. So the dog has to be like, that's all gone. Activity is over. Otherwise they'll just keep trying to throw it around the room. That was Bethany, that all of our listeners will know Bethany, because she was sitting in on our Monday night dog classes as well. And she emailed me and was like, you have to talk to these ladies. Like, she was like, this is the most amazing thing in the world. I was like, hell yeah. Sick.
She got to see some quite special dogs
as
well.
She saw some crackers,
What do you think? Do you think she's going to make it as a dog trainer?
Oh, yeah.
She showed me her video, her final assessment video for her course. Oh, my God. It was so good. Yeah, I was like, what? Directional retrieve. I was like, dang, girl. Like, very impressive. I was like, oh gosh. Okay, cool. So I'm just writing notes while you're talking, because I want to go back to a few things. So for people that are listening, we're hearing that any dog can do scent type work because they all have a nose. One of the things that I would like to ask about is, so, you know, we're talking about the prey drive and like search or seek being basically step one of that. And then the, you know, different breeds are going to have different focus on the different parts of the sequence. So if people don't know what we're talking about, tell me if I get this in the wrong order. Search, look, stalk, strike, kill, parade, consume. Was that in the right order?
Yes.
Good on you, Sam.
Okay. So we're not going to go fully into it. So I just wanted to put that list out there so people can Google it. So work ethic wise, is this something that we have to look at? Because there's going to be, I would imagine, different breeds, but also different individual dogs within the breed that struggle with. So we're asking for search, but they struggle maybe with, I looked and I can't find it. You know, is this a work ethic thing? How would people address, what's the go?
Yeah, absolutely. So that motivation is really, really important. So as you just said, different breeds have different intrinsic motivation, I suppose, what they're bred to do. So for us in conservation, we will probably always stick with the gun dog group because it is so naturally reinforcing to search. And in terms of conservation or detection, you need a dog that is wanting to do it all day, not necessarily that you do it all day, because they need to rest, of course. Their welfare is really important. But you want something that is just naturally, that's what they love so much. In fact, our springers, to be honest, the reward that we give them for finding it, they want it, but they really just want to get going.
The search itself is the reward.
So in terms of that, they're just, it's a no-brainer for these dogs to do it. You've just got to teach them that when you find this, please tell me. And
I'm searching with you.
I'm also
we're best friends.
Don't forget about me.
and I'm also here, but my nose is not that good. When we find the thing, can you tell me?
Exactly. Please tell me. And we see that with our springers too. Like, sometimes we're so excited, they clock it. We see they clock it and we go, oh, yeah, you found it, didn't you? And they're up again,
And that for them is, I don't want the game to finish just yet. So therefore, I'm not telling you where it is. I'm going to go around and do another 13 laps.
Yeah.
This is actually part two of the game, which is I now know where it is and you have to either find it or catch me.
Absolutely, exactly right, So there's pros and cons to that too. But then you've got other dogs, as you said, you know, so you, like your Staffy and stuff like that, or your sight hounds and things like that. They're naturally going to be eye focused. So when they first come in, so the first week we do is just play, instilling the search game, you know, for food or a toy.
I run around like an idiot.
So. Yes, you
do. Love to see that.
pretty good. And then the second week we start to pair the odor with a reward, and that's mm-hmm. the major thing. So the dog needs to want that reward. It really, mm-hmm. really does. So you want to maybe spend some time on building some motivation for that reward. But mm-hmm. at the same time, you've got some dogs that will just naturally look for it to begin with. They won't put their nose down too much. So we just work. That's the best thing too, is that each dog is completely unique. So our approach is not the same for every single dog, because we can see what's happening in front mm-hmm. of us. So if the dog is, even border collies, things like that, eyes, they're going to look for it. Of course, all dogs are going to use whatever is available to find it. But mm-hmm. some dogs will be more eye, you know, sight is going to be a very strong thing that they go to, their first go-to. Whereas, you know, your springers and visuals and things are head down, bottom up, and then straight into their nose. So what we'll do over time with those is just, yep, you can use your eyes to begin with. That's fine. You're still going to get your reward when you find it. But then we're going to start to just put it out of sight a little bit. Yeah. Once we know that it's, oh, and then you see them sort of engage their nose and sort of teach them that it's the nose now that's actually starting to, because you've got one, you use it, you just don't use it as readily as perhaps another breed. Mm-hmm. And then you've got dogs like the brachycephalic breeds, boxers, bulldogs, all the dogs with short nose. And they can also do it. They're brilliant at it, but they'll get more fatigued. Got to be careful as to how many repetitions you do that. So there's lots of little intricacies as to how to incorporate, as you said, those different natural parts of that cycle that they will intrinsically go to or as their go-to to begin with, and how we can actually just start to foster that. Okay, let's use your nose. You can still use your eyes if you want to, but let's switch that towards your nose.
And an interesting thing in that too is when we talk, because we have a Labrador and we do work with a lot of golden retrievers in Ballarat. So we work with a lot of golden retrievers and Labradors, is they want to interact with it. That's one of their first things. So they're built to retrieve. They were bred to retrieve. So the amount of times when it starts to click to them, this is what gets me the reward, they pick it up. And it was a big thing for us training our own lab in terms of don't muzzle punch it. Need to move. You don't need to bring it to me. I just want you to show me where it is. And that was probably, whereas, you know, with the springers and, you know, the wildlife and everything's big, the big thing with him was to not interact with the target, because that's what he's intrinsically bred to do.
So how do you do that? Like, would you just stay, like real close quarters, and as soon as you see them find it, you put them straight into a sit? So it's like, or something, how do you do that?
We'll just mark it earlier, and or you can put it into something that's inaccessible for them to pick up. I mean, we have had dogs, like, you know, a brick, a house brick that has all the holes in it. You might put it down in there. So they can't actually do that. Although we did have a German Shepherd that did pick up
the brick. That,
there's always one.
So you find a way, or just teach them to gradually back off that the rewards come with you, back off away from that. So, but it can be challenging. And the thing is, because we've gone through so much with him wanting to interact with it, we see it in sort of particularly the Goldies and Labs. So when we're helping clients, we now know to tell them, don't let it go that far. Let's catch it before we.
A lot of it's about marking early.
Yeah, like really catching it.
And so we do train. We train dogs to find things, but we're also training handlers to work out.
Yeah.
Okay. This is how you read your dog.
Yes.
And your dog's about to interact, so quickly mark, and then the dog starts to go, oh, okay, I get marked when I'm about, you know, 15 centimeters from it or 20 centimeters from it. So that's where I'm going to start to go rather than picking it up and parading it around the room.
Especially if people had done a lot of shaping work with their dogs, I think those dogs would be trying to anticipate the next and what next and like what next. What do you want me to do next? Whereas you'd have to kind of be like, it's nothing next.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's it. It's always it. And the reward's over here or something like that, maybe.
Yeah. And I think we do find a bit of that when we start to put out multiple targets. So we do eventually get to that in classes where it's not just one target, we'll have multiples. That's helped alleviate a bit of that as well, because it's like, okay, on to the next one. Thank you. Let's go again. And that's where we we found out with using our springers is that they'd find it and we'd go, okay, great, game's over. And that's when they stopped telling us where it was.
Yeah. That makes sense. Oh, so smart.
Now we have to just keep them going, even if we know there's nothing else there.
Yeah.
To make sure they don't just quit and go, no, I'm not going to tell
you
anymore.
We have to ask them to clear the area.
Yeah, just clear it. Just keep searching and we know there's nothing there. But,
so bless smart. Them.
They are.
So gradually, a gradual introduction to stuff, building up the dog's, you know, tolerance to the work, and I guess increasing, I mean, humans would call that their like frustration tolerance. So, yeah. You know, like, do you see any dogs like rage quitting or like that sort of stuff?
Yeah, we've seen it all. We've seen it all, really. But yeah, got to be really careful that frustration can start to really build in there. So we just try and get ahead of it early. And it might be that the reward is something else that the dog really loves to do. So if you do that, you do get to, we've used even with our spaniels, because they do have that prey drive, as you said, a flushing game. So we might use as a reward sometimes a little flirt pole, like a little, you can't chase that, but you can chase this, you know, this is your reward. So incorporating all into that, environmental rewards, the whole thing, yeah, you can.
And when dealing with client dogs and with pet dogs, we've always said in everything we do, whether it's scent, whether it's behavioral stuff, one does not fit everybody. Mm. If a trainer ever says to you, this is the way you do it, it's run.
Yeah.
Because every dog that you step in front of is different, and every way in which they learn is different. So I think we use that a lot. It's like, and when we're in classes, we have maximum six dogs in a class. And when we're in that scent environment, every single one of those dogs may be learning the situation differently.
Mm.
They may be having a different, in you know, experience with it. They may need a different reward. They may start on a food reward. We need to move to a tug reward.
Mm-hmm.
It should always be fluid. It should always be reading the dog, understanding what message is the dog taking from this.
And at the end of the course, was the goal for the dog to find that thing, or was the goal for the dog to be able to come into a room where six or seven people are staring at them and be okay with that? And for us, that's way more important.
These are not
scent detection dogs. They're not going off to do this for a living. So it's really important. And, you know, people are naturally competitive, I think, can be in a class and want to be the best, but we pretty quickly kind of make sure it's so individual that everyone gets to see what the goal is for a particular dog and or handler and or yeah. handler as well, all together, team.
And just talking on that, do you have a dog, have we ever seen a dog that quits? We've had one just recently, and I'm quite sure she wouldn't mind that we spoke about Dottie, in that she, when we started doing the like discrimination, so here's a blank pod, here's a pod with the scent in it, and she went to the blank one and wasn't rewarded. So she went, well, I give up.
That's it.
I give up.
Stuffiest.
I don't like this game. I don't want to play. And it was then that her handler realized that she does this in her life. She does it in so many different aspects. So we changed the way we actually did that discrimination, and which also changed her life. She stopped giving up on things. She started to go, oh, I can have another go at this, and I'm okay.
Yeah.
And you know, she's a very anxious, nervous little Dalmatian. She's gorgeous. And but she just, that was her way. That was what she did. She went, oh, well, I got it wrong.
Yeah.
I have lots of human clients like that.
Exactly. It's lots of, and there's lots of handlers like that we discover as well. It's like, okay, but the dog got it wrong.
I'll put my hand up. My Jara, our middle spaniel, and myself are the same. We want to get it right. The other day I'm teaching her to do something and she's not getting right. And she just whined at me. It's got to be this one. It's got to be. And I'm like, darling, I know you're a perfectionist. You've got to go back a step now. So,
but I just like that builds resilience in humans when you learn that, like, oh, no, you actually can keep trying. Like, you can develop a bit of grit here. You know, and I know that we're seeing the same thing in dogs. Like, we're seeing the same, like, here's a challenge in a controlled setting where there's no opportunity for you to get hurt. And it's okay for me to show you that, like, hey, you're fine and you can actually keep going.
Resilience in dogs is just as important.
Awesome. Yeah.
So we call it accidental resilience training.
Yeah.
You put them in a situation and they go, oh, I can do that.
It's pretty cool.
It is so cool, isn't it?
It's really cool. Okay, so we know that from this chat so far, we know that our scent work, nose work stuff can be suitable for pretty much every dog.
Yep.
We know that it's got a high chance of increasing our dog's overall confidence, resilience, those sorts of things. You've mentioned already a couple of starter activities that people could do. So scatter feeding, for people who don't know, that's when you throw your treats out or your food out into the grass and the dogs go and find it and they've got to sniff it all out. And it's a really good one for when you're leaving the house for work. It's perfect for that. But yeah, if your dogs, your dogs sometimes are just a little bit all hopped up and they just need a little bit more of something before you leave for the day, or you've got to sit down and get something done and the dogs need a bit more, then scatter feeding can be perfect for that. You mentioned so the treat hide and seek. So, actually would you use like maybe a same size kibble size treat for that, or would you start with a bigger treat? Do you put it in something? We play treat hide and seek with my clients at work, but I use the silicon cupcake mold things because I need to know where the kids have put them. Because they put them like on top of the fish tank and the dogs can't get them. And so it will send the dogs insane if I don't know, because they can smell it. Yeah. So if I don't know where it is, so it's really more so for my like management of this scenario, but it's a dead giveaway. Like the visuals are a dead. They're a did giveaway. What other games could people try to get them their dogs started on using scent? Do you do like a treat under a cup and move them around like a
You do
magician?
that. You can like the cups, like that cups game, really. You can put treats on the cup. So starting to hide it, I suppose. And you think about different types of breeds, like I'm thinking about little dash hounds and the little ratters and stuff like that, making sure you're putting things under cushion, depending on what the treat is as well, under cushions and stuff that naturally they'd find, like that real hunting kind of activity. So again, depending on the dog, what they like. And some dogs, if it is too hard, will just give up. So you're gonna make sure that it's a little bit easier for them.
Or you remember where you put the treats, because that's annoying. If
Oh, that happens to me
treats in your
sometimes.
couch.
Now, between our three dogs and our cat, let me tell you, there's not gonna be a treat left.
Someone will find it.
We have had mice in the house over the last couple of months. We've had mice coming in, and I'm trying to catch them in the mouse traps and stuff, but I taught the dogs to where's a mouse, and so they're obsessed. But anyway, the mouse must have been like gone through our couch one day. So just a warning to everyone. Every time the dogs come in the house, they rip if I let them, which I often do because it's funny. And we often rev them up and go, where's a mouse? But they will pull every cushion off the couch,
Oh,
digging their heads in,
goodness.
and they're having Snarler and Penny the time of their lives. There's no mouse, but like I don't know if they know that or not. They just are so committed to this little hunt. But if you were just a normal person, you might think that's annoying. So maybe have a think about where you teach the dogs, like that they can find things. Just little
Absolutely.
word,
Maybe I'll
little
take it outside.
warning,
Take
little
it
word,
outside.
word of warning from someone
Yeah,
who has
good.
done
That's a
that
good one.
to
Yeah,
their
that's
own
true.
house
We
very
don't think
recently.
about that, but that's true.
Yeah.
And one of the things we do say with the treats is when you start it with something that's really high value. So if they get fed kibble, they might not be just as keen to find kibble. So if it's something high value, whatever your dog likes, whatever hierarchy, my lab's favorite treat is carrot. So, started his
Healthy.
life in the guide dog program. That's what I trained him with, was carrots. So he, we can, it's that high value thing until they really understand the game. And just one other little word of warning. If you have resource guarding
Oh, yes.
in your dogs, be very aware of if you're hiding things in couches or such like that you remove everything if they haven't found it, because you can actually end up with a situation where, you may walk past the couch and the dog decides that you're not coming near his treat that he knows is still there. That's one thing I stipulate when we work with dogs in a home setting, is if you've got propensity for resource guarding, just be aware that that scent and that treat or even that toy becomes a resource.
Yeah, and the area, like can they can like among other dogs, like we're always I'm always careful with can everybody see me pick this up and take it away and tell you it's all gone, just so that later on, an hour down the track, they don't decide to run the Hunger Games between themselves and see who's gonna get that.
And just while we're mentioning things about dogs, you know, resource guarding or becoming a scent thing, becoming aversive, be careful with doing scatter feeding only when you leave. Because otherwise it becomes the predictor of you leaving. So for us, we might scatter feed before we leave, but we've scatter fed today, just you know, now. Although they are trying to bang the back door down right now. So, you know, we can, it's using all of those, anything, your puzzle toys, your Kongs, your, all of those things that, you know, involve them hunting, seeking, or
if the dog's got some separation.
If the dog's got separation or resource guarding, just be aware of those as well.
Yeah. I caused a problem with my old Labrador with scatter feeding as well. Cause he's just like generalized it to grass.
Yeah.
And so then when I took him for walks, it was all I could do to get him out of the grass, like off his face, off the grass. He just thought all grass had snacks inside of it, for sure. He was 100% convinced.
He is a Labrador. They're convinced that snacks are everywhere.
100%, exactly. Like, I was like, so we might have to, but I didn't know what I know now, I would be putting opening a window of opportunity for that now and then closing a window, which I didn't know back then. So I just had to ban scatter feeding for him.
we learn.
That's it. We learn these things along the
Dougie's
way.
Dougie's super friendly. Like he's a groodle. So he's just got that natural interest in other dogs and other people. And I was working with trying to use scatter feeding when we're out as a way to just try and refocus him sometimes. Too bad, but he, because he's on a special diet of crocodile, I'm very limited with what I can use.
Yes.
So he was just like, I'm not having it. Like when we're out, this isn't high value enough, Mum. Sorry, everything else is just too exciting.
The world, the people are way more exciting than that stuff I get at home.
Yeah, but he's great in the home. Loves doing all of that.
If people, like, let's say, for example, if people were going to try and do like the three cups, what cups it under sort of deal, what do we need to know about like contamination and stuff like that? Like sometimes with my puzzle toys, I think it's a bit tricky because the odor's still so fresh of the treats being in there. Is that something we need to be aware of, or like,
yeah, contamination's a huge thing. We if we're doing something with detection and it's going to be something very specific, contamination is, we're very, very careful. We use gloves and change gloves for every single thing. In our scent classes, we're probably less worried about contamination because life is contamination. Like it's you know, so what we will do though, if we are putting out a search and we've gone and put out, we've got gloves on or not, put out the odor somewhere, we'll then go around and make sure that we touch lots of other things. We walk in a big we walk all over the place, so because a dog can come into a search area, just track where you've walked and go straight to the odor. So making sure that in a sense, we kind of contaminate the whole area as much as we can. So that's one way to work through it, so the dog doesn't just necessarily, or you can go all the way up to making sure that you're using gloves, and it just depends what your purpose is. Initially, when the dog's first learning, maybe a little bit of help is helpful for them, and then you can get a bit more specific as they really drill down on it, is that particular odor that's getting them the reward.
I think with using the example of the cup game, making sure all three cups are exactly the same.
Yep.
So the containers, and that's what we talk about when we do like week two of our class, is, you know, we don't care what container you use. You just got to make sure all of them are the same. Mm-hmm. You can get a takeaway container and punch holes in it. Mm-hmm. But when you start to come to discrimination, you need to be able to make sure that you've got exactly the same takeaway container with holes punched in it. So the difference only becomes the odor. So it would be that thing of, you know, you touch, making sure that if you're putting out a piece of odor, you know, a piece of kibble or a treat under a cup, you do touch each three cups. You don't just touch the cup that you pick it up, then put the treat under and put it, because the dog's going to just go, well, that's Mum's truck. Touch, so I'm going to go there.
Because they can smell like a fresh, 100%. They can smell like the freshness of the odor, can't they? So they know like, the last cup that you touched was this one.
Yep.
Wow.
And that's like when you put out an odor to search, if you don't do what Tanya just talked about, which is muddling the area, they'll just track you.
Yeah.
They'll just go, well, you walked over here and you did something there, so there it is. And,
I see my livestock guardian dog track me all the time.
Yeah.
So she uses
to do.
She uses her nose first, and then she uses her ears, and then she uses her eyes. And so she'll track me. But if I go outside at nighttime, she's like, oh, someone's there, and I have to talk to her. And then she's like, oh, no, I know who that is.
Yep.
Before she, like, her eyes are not, like, her main thing, which is, it's so amazing to watch how they perceive the world, because it's just so different to how generally human beings perceive the world. But I guess
each breed of dog perceives it.
Yeah.
Like amazing. That's what she's bred to do at night. Mm. She's bred to guard.
Yeah. And she's on, and she is on guard. Like on, as soon as it gets dusk.
Yep. She's on.
She's on. Like, whereas I can dick around all day out in the yard, like, you know, and she's like, la, 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 la. Like,
as soon as that sun's gone, that's it. Her job starts.
She starts. And I'm like, eek, it's me.
And you can also, just on the last thing on the contamination thing, was that you can also teach a dog that the residual odor doesn't pay anymore. You can just change the game. You're now looking for the freshest source of that. So it depends on the goal, but you may also, so you want to be careful to make sure that you don't say, oh, no, you're wrong, because you're actually probably right. You know, if they are indicating on a residual odor, they're right. But you can change it depending on your outcome, your goal. Mm. You can then say, like, okay, we're now going to ignore that. Because if something isn't rewarded, eventually it just sort of, we're gonna put that in the back burner. That actually doesn't pay me anymore, so I'm not gonna pay as much attention. So you can actually shift them to finding the actual source, and that's what we tend to do with our guys as well. But
and dogs are that smart. Oh, they can so actually, you know, they can go, okay. And this is where Tonya says they are right. If they do indicate or tell you that there's residual odor there, and we do find that a lot in our classes, as we said, we are quite contaminated, and we know that, but that's how we work. We're not training detection dogs. So we will get a dog that will come in and indicate on probably on a box that has been closed up, but the odor's no longer in it, but it was in there the round before. We don't reward them for that. And so they start to go, okay, that odor not being, just being slightly there, it doesn't pay me. I need to find the freshest.
Yeah.
The strongest. Yeah.
We're looking to find the source of the odor.
Yeah, okay. And then for people, like, if they're just mucking around at home, would you do like a no reward as well? Like, would you do like a nup and then take them away if they are really fixated on, because you know how dogs can get, they're like, it is this.
Yeah.
And it can be hard to get them to change course. Sometimes you might need to give them a nup and start a new rep.
Yeah, well, what happened the other day, I'm training Jarrah on two species that are very similar on their fur, and she's like, no, it's definitely this. And I just went, nah, sorry, darling, let's move off. Let's go to reset. Now I've got to change my training plan to make it clearer to you that it's this one that, you know, so that's what we're working on at the moment. So, yeah, it's true. A little no reward marker. Initially when we're doing getting the dog onto odor, we've got two containers that are the same. One's a blank, one has the odor in it. So the only difference is the actual odor. Mm. And so we just, if the dog goes over to, so it's done by shaping, and then if the dog goes over to the blank and sort of looks, or is it the pod, because we use these little pods, and then goes back, we only ever mark when they're over the odor. And so they start to go, oh, okay, it's not actually the container, it's the odor inside.
Yeah.
So that's the best way to start if you want to do it from home. You just have the two. And you can mark with treats or toys or whatever you want.
Whatever reward your dog tells you that it is its highest rewarding, that's what you mark.
And then how do you take it further than that? So you start with the two and then you move them further apart or?
Further apart, then you can add more blanks, etc. Then you can start to move it around and they start to search for it. Oh, and that part actually, that happens pretty quickly. They start to get that. There's no reward for this other thing, these other blanks, but there is when I find this. And you can see the cogs turning. You can see them go, oh, it's this. That's what's interesting to me. And then down the track, you can add other discriminators. So you can add something else, that another odor that's there. Like, I don't know, if we were doing we've got truffle oil, we might have an easy one might be, yeah, well, that'd be soy fairly sauce hard, soy sauce or something like that. And then the dog goes and sniffs that and goes, oh, that's interesting. And then they go back to them and they go, this one, and you mark that. It's like, oh, no, it's only this. So you can get really, really specific then something with an oil like a sesame oil that where the base is the same, but the two, you know, that's truffle versus sesame, you know, so you can get really, really specific. But
I mean, that would be a more advanced game, truffle versus sesame. Advanced. Okay. Okay, so don't do that straight away.
Okay, then.
And so thrusting in our most advanced game, what we do in our scent squad, which we can talk about in a second, is I will, after we've done about three rounds in scent squad, I won't tell the participants, but I actually bring out truffle. And it's not truffle oil anymore. It's actually truffle. And yet, as to yet, we've not had a dog that hasn't been able to find it.
Yeah.
Wow. So could we become like truffle millionaires if we train our dogs?
We could.
We just need an army of dogs and a truffle farm.
We just need to come together.
Where are truffles? Where are truffles? Where are the truffles?
Where are they?
Short circuiting. I'm going to be a truffle millionaire. I have like 100 dogs.
You've got right now is truffle season. So winter is when they're up. So there's about 3 months or so, I think, that they're the most ripe. So there's a lot of truffle farms that are training
their own dogs.
Their own dogs. So that's unfortunate. And there are other organisations that do, or teams that will go and come in and find the truffles.
So Jara's mum is a truffle dog.
Truffles grow in the wild too, though, don't they?
Yeah.
They do.
I think so.
They do, but it's very rare to find them. Yeah. So most of the things, they grow in the base of oak trees. Mm. If you decided to open a truffle farm, you need to have a lot of patience because you inoculate the tree. From my understanding, I'm not an expert, and it takes about 7 years, I think, before the actual truffles will appear. Mm-hmm. Hence why they're about $3,500 a kilo.
Oh, my God. How much?
They're about $3,500. Per kilo.
Yeah.
We're going to be
something like that.
Rich.
Yeah.
Except that we need to feed about 20 dogs in order to.
I just feel like I heard you say it takes 15 minutes to teach them to get onto the
All that middle bit and the bit about the farm.
I need to bog down in the details, ladies.
Just coming back to what we were saying before, how do you also tell your dog what scent they should be focusing on if there's different scents that they're looking for? Is that a thing? Like, do you?
So it depends on, so if I understand the question correctly, it depends on what your outcome is, what you want. So you've either have a scent that you want your dog to find.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you kind of?
Yeah. Like if there's a few different scents that you're working with, say in the more advanced level, how do you tell them which one they should be looking
for? Like if you taught them to look for galahs and koalas, like those are their scents, for example,
which
does that just mean that they're always allowed to indicate on any galah and koala, or do you have like go find the koala?
So a few things. So from my understanding, once a dog it has learnt a particular odour, they will remember that. And the only reason that it will drop off is if they're just no longer rewarded for it. So as we said earlier, if they occur in the same environment, they will indicate on what they've been trained to find. There are some people, so the environment will often indicate to the dog, even when you, so when we rock up to Wind Farm, Jared knows we're looking for birds and bats because that's what we do. So the environment is telling her that that's what she's doing. There are some people working on teaching their dog to indicate and almost tell them via various mechanisms what it is that they've found. That's still a work in progress as to whether a dog can get that specific. But mostly it's the environment that tells them what's there. And from my understanding, my experience, it's whatever the dog has been trained to find, they will find it if it's in that environment, which is why it's so important, unless you want to know, it's really important as to which odours you put the dog on, if that's going to be beneficial for your project or not. So if, for example, you did have a pest dog, so a dog looking for fox and cat, but it was on a endangered quoll or something. So you're going out, the dog's going out and doing fox and cat scat and finding that, but then it indicates on, you know, a quoll scat, you may really want to know that quoll is actually there. So there's the flip side to that as well. So it's, yeah, I think a lot of people would think with scent is sort of like the old, sort of Rin Tin Tin or Lassie or something, where you just wave the dog. And there are police dogs that can do that, but it's not quite.
That's a very high level of training.
Yeah.
And they're like, their base training in scent is human scent. And then we're just adding a little layer on top of it if you're waving a piece of, but really what they're looking for is human scent.
Yeah.
But I think in terms, and but from what am I understanding, I don't know a lot about the competitive sports of nose works. Tanya knows a bit more about it than me, but from friends of ours that have done it, from my understanding, they will put, there's four odors in nose works and they will put all four in advanced levels out. So the dog indicates on any four. If they smell any of those four, they'll actually be able to indicate that they're there. Whereas I think when they start on the first level, which is birch, and that's only birch in the environment. But once they start to get up to champion level, they put out all four scents.
But the handler's not going to know.
But the handler doesn't know what those scents.
The dog does.
The dog, the dog's not going to go, "Hi, I found the birch." This one's the cypress, but. You know, they will indicate on, because they have an indication upon their scent. And as Tanya said, there's early trainings of different indications for different scents. There's been some people we've known that may put on a different pair of shoes for where they actually are going. But once that dog's imprinted, and I think the key word is imprinted, on a particular scent, they will indicate on it when they find it.
Yeah.
I've taken my Labrador for a walk and he's indicated on a dead bird. You know, we're not anywhere. We're just gone for a walk.
Yeah.
But he knows that bird carcass pates.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, for us in that really, it's very important that I reward him for that. Even though we're just out for a walk, that it's very important I still reward him, because otherwise he starts to go, well, that doesn't pay.
Yeah.
Not even bother with that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I gather from that then is, like, when you're starting out, it's probably a good idea to really just stick with one. Like, it could be very easy to be totally confusing for the dog. Absolutely. If you're like, oh, I'll try lavender this time, or
resist the urge to go, we'll do everything.
Better to stick to one.
Why do I have a picture in my head that, like, you would be like, okay, Lassie, and then you give them like the smell of the lavender and then you're like, go find it.
That's what's in my head too.
Where is that from?
That's what we've seen in movies and everything. And as I say, some dogs can be trained to do that. But say some of the police dogs that say they find mobile phones and things like that, they've been trained to find that particular metal or container.
Yeah.
And anything that resembles that, they're going to indicate on. I believe there's dogs that are that specific that they've been trained to find, they can imprint that quickly. I still think in that search area, if they found any jumper or any sock or whatever, they would go for it. So, but some people think it's magic, just wave it and then off they go. They're very clever, but it would take a bit longer for the dog to realize that it is that particular odor that I'm looking for. I think more chance that the dog is just going to then look for articles that humans or anything that humans kind of touched or left behind and go for that. And then
it's up to them. We've got to remember that this is, the human is always involved in this.
Yeah.
And we're the one with the primate brain.
Yeah.
So we're the ones that can then go, okay, that's not little Timmy's sock. That's, you know, John down the road's been out in the paddock. But, you know, it's up to them to go, no, that's not it. Keep going. Let's go. And it's the same, I think, from my understanding with bomb detection dogs. And there's lots of components that can make up a bomb. And the dog is trained on all of those components.
Mm.
So in that sense, they do have a cocktail of scent, but that cocktail can then make up a whole article. Mm. So,
wow, interesting.
It's complicated.
It's funny because we say it's so simple to imprint, but then we also don't understand really what the dog's smelling.
Yeah, that's so right.
What is the dog interpreting?
Because they're actually smelling everything. So,
And what we're asking them to do
is
wind that right down to one specific thing, which is why we say with pet dogs, why I say with behavioural work is start with food and start with something that is high value to that dog.
Yeah,
we're not going to go, right, I want you to find a piece of rice that's this type, because the dog's just going to go, I don't want to play this game.
Yeah. Boring.
Boring.
And then anything with scent, it's actually once they've trained to find a particular odor, the magic really is of what they're actually ignoring while they're finding that particular odor.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So they all start going, nah, there it is, you know. So that's, yeah, we point that out to people all the time. It's like, imagine all the smells. And so with conservation detection dogs, we get them outside as soon as we possibly can because we need to work that distraction in very quickly.
We started Jarrah outside.
We just on skip. We don't even start inside. We'll just go straight outside. So
yeah.
Pet dog, when we do our scent classes, we start inside and we do it inside for at least about seven classes and then we'll take it outside. We have to be absolutely 100% certain that the dog knows the odor.
Yeah.
We're going to confuse the dog and the last thing we want to do. And, you know, some dogs will get it in 4 weeks and could step straight outside. Other dogs might take 8-9 weeks and that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Mm. As long as the dog is enjoying themselves, you're getting some benefits that you might be seeing, you know, in the rest of their life. But the key for us is the dog's having a good time.
Yeah.
Good enrichment activity. Yeah.
And it's an activity you do with their handler.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful connection. It's a beautiful connection
activity.
And we say, like, in the conservation world, the dog's not a tool. You don't just send the dog out to go and do it. It's you and the dog.
It's dog and handler. Our teams have had that drilled into them as well. Therapy dogs are the same. It's not the dog. You're a team. That's why we don't just assess the dog. Like, we have to train the handler and then we train you to work together and you're assessed as a team because you are a team. It's not either one of you.
Too, didn't you?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just train the dog and the dog's supposed to guide people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so if people are thinking, like, let's say Penny, our Staffy, for example, if I was going to teach her to find a toy, because she would love to find the toy if I was then going to play with her with the toy, she would be like, absolutely. Should I start, like, if I was going to say, like, find it, for example, should I, like, hold the toy out and be like, find it, and it's right in front of her, and then she gets it, and then I'm like, reward, or should I, like, let her see me put it somewhere, and then find it and then have her on lead so I can because I think some dogs would be like, no one knows what you're talking about, mum, and just walk off. Like, I guess we're not playing anymore, you know, like, you've put the toy away somewhere, you weirdo. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you do this?
Do you understand game, mum?
Okay, I don't know what find it is, but I'm not sure why I put my toy behind the fridge.
Yeah. As simple as you possibly can. So it might be that you're holding it first, or it might be that it's just out in front of her. Go find it. Yeah, make a massive deal and have a play with her. Then a little bit further, then slightly out of sight. And you've got to watch the dog the whole time. Are they still engaged in the game? Are they really enjoying this part of it? And with a Staffy, they'd be very visual as well. You might do visual stuff for quite some time. And when there's a drop in motivation, when the dog just goes, this isn't as much fun, that's the moment where you think, well, hopefully you don't get there. But if you do, then you go, okay, we've just got to go back a step here and make sure we build this before this step here, before we move on to something else. It's still got to be really motivating for the dog to do that. So keep it super simple. So if we're working with the odor or whatever, we've got the container, we are in a blank room, you know, ideally with just the pod, and it's like, nothing is, we do it via shaping. So when the dog interacts with that, it gets a reward. So there's nothing else that's exciting in the environment except for that. And that's the only thing that's going to pay here. So I'd keep it as simple as possible. Watch her motivation. If she's getting engaged and she's really loving it, then you can move to the next step and make it a bit harder.
Yeah. Okay.
Buddy loves it when I hide his toys. So we'll do go find it. He knows what the game is, but I'll usually use the toy he's already brought me. So he's usually quite good about, like, he chooses different toys each day, whatever's, you know, on the menu. And that's usually the one that he's like, I know that this is going to be the one that, but I do the same thing where I'm like, here's the toy. Cause I put him behind this baby gate. Same. I'm like, this is the toy. And then I go and hide it and I'm like, go find it. And he just
gets the right toy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But your odors, that's got your freshest odor.
Exactly.
On
and that's exactly, I'm going, oh my gosh, he's,
and you
he's
probably walked to figured a spot, out. Put it down, walked back again. So your odor's on it, plus you've left an odor trail to where you walk to, etc. They're so clever.
So smart. Yeah.
And they want to please us. I mean, that's dogs, isn't it? Like, most of them want to really please us. So it's like, you get really excited when I do this. So I'm having fun, but I love that you're having fun too.
Yeah.
I'm making you happy. So I'm going to go and get this and do a wiggle. And
that fits in too, Sam, with your dogs ripping the couch apart.
Yeah.
You find it entertaining.
It's funny. Yeah.
And it's funny. And they go, well, we're just going to keep doing this because Mum loves this when we do this
Mom's
game.
Laughing.
And we get so much out of it as well.
Yeah.
And But I also like, Max, how you did the, you put him behind a baby gate. So that for us is building drive as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
One of the things that we do in the class, and we don't do this with every dog, we work it out as to whether the dog needs it, is able to do it, is we'll actually get the handler to hold the dog back. Mm-hmm. And I'll take a squeaky toy and I'll just, you know, play around and jump around, and the dog's going, I want it.
Yeah.
And then I'll pretend, you know, where I'm going to put it and I'll drop in a box that they don't notice. And then, you know, and then it's like, right, go, go have. And so you're building that drive and that fun. You'll have some dogs in that if I even remotely jumped around, the dog would go, nah, I'm out. Way too much. But there's some dogs that walk in and I watch the way they walk in and I go, right, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to guide the handler of what to do with the dog, whether it's just dropping some food into a box. So it's all so dependent on the dog.
Yeah.
And for Penny, like, she's so toy driven and such like that. It would be, and she's so visual being a staffy. It would be that easy thing of starting out of going, here's your toy, I'm gonna drop it over there.
Yeah.
And then if she goes and runs and gets it, make a massive fuss about the fact she's
and get someone involved, as you just said, to hold her back, and then go and squeak and put it, especially a squeaky toy. I bet she probably loves
I bet she'd pick that up so quickly.
Yeah, and then she goes racing after it. So,
It's working out what your dog likes. And you might have two staffies that are completely different.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's really determining what meets the needs of each one of those dogs.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually walking all around the room now.
That's it. That's
what
you need to do.
Run around. Walk everywhere. Buy his toy and then walk everywhere.
Yeah.
Touch everything. So he's not just tracking you, he actually has to look for his toy.
He's gonna be like, Mom's figured me out. Damn it.
Funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we finish up, ladies, do you want to tell us a bit about, so how do people get into this if they want help? Like, do you do consults online? Like, you're obviously in Ballarat, so all of our Victorian teams can come and knock on your door.
Melbourne as well. So we do consults in Melbourne. Just got to put them ahead. You mostly do that. Come and do classes in Ballarat. We run at Mount Clear. This is our scent stuff anyway. We do scent level 1 and 2, and we're developing more. After they've done level 2, if the dog's loving it, the people are loving it, we have what we call Scent Squad, which is a private group where we basically take it out on the road. So someone offers up their farm or something and we'll go and do searches, you know, in barns and things like that. And we might do like a mock truffle hunt at Vic Park and put, you know, at the base of the trees and sort of simulate what it would be like when we're all going to be millionaires. Of being truffle dogs. So that's a really fun, and we also have Scent Squad dinners, don't we?
Yeah. That gets very social.
We all talk dogs.
Scent Squad winery tour. Yeah,
trust me, that one's on the list.
Nearly, so classes, we will probably develop an online course, I think, at some stage for people to sort of follow along at home and have fun at home. We do adolescent classes as well. We said adolescent/adult classes and behavioural consults anywhere in this region, and as we said, in Melbourne as well. So looking to add a lot more online stuff as well. We know that there's a big gap there.
For behavioural stuff, I travel to Melbourne. I travel through to Dales. I do stuff in Daylesford. I do stuff up to Ararat and we'll go. Mm-hmm. I've done Maryborough.
Yeah, down to Geelong.
Yeah, Maryborough. So pretty much everywhere or anywhere that's required. So
amazing. Mm-hmm. And if people are in a totally different area of the country, what should they be Googling if they can just find someone in their area?
Nose work. It depends what they want to do. So if you want to be interested maybe in trialing and things like that, and you want to get into nose work thing, you probably just jump onto like Dogs Australia or your specific state, Dogs Vic, etc. And there will be there's two schools basically that run scent work in Australia where you can compete with four owners we were talking about before. So you can find their details there, and then you can, they often have lists of people who train in that way. Ours is a little bit different. It is definitely just a little bit more a different focus, I suppose. Yeah. Probably move a little faster in some way. So it just depends, and there's a lot of scent dog trainers around. There's a lot of conservation detection trainers who around the country who run scent classes as well and workshops and whatever. So scent work, nose work, any of those they could Google. But jump onto your local, your state sort of dogs Vic. If you're looking more at the trialing in nose works, so that's probably the way to go.
So scent work, nose work, conservation dog, Google that. Like, you might find dog trainers are doing conservation stuff. They might have, introductory scent also nose stuff.
Email us because we know a lot of conservation trainers are all over the country, WA to South Australia to Queensland, that also run scent classes. So we're more than happy to direct people into.
We've brought a couple of international trainers over, conservation detection dog trainers. So we do have a lot of contacts in that field anyway. So that are doing it all the way up, as you said, Sunshine Coast, across to Perth and everything.
Cairns, we know people up in Cairns, we know people in Perth, we know people in Adelaide.
And that'll probably, a lot of those trainers are doing private stuff too, if people are interested.
In the UK and the US, we've got people as well.
So. We also do private sessions.
Okay, everyone. Gosh. I call friends and us. That's fine.
it's actually a very small industry.
This is because we haven't been doing Therapy Dog Winery tours.
I know. We're going to get into that.
That'll be brewery tour. man trailing is one that I've seen people talking about as well. Tracking, and I used to do tracking with Sunny when he was little, like where you'd follow a person. So people are interested in that kind of stuff as well. It's more, I think that's more like club type stuff too, where you go and lay
tracks. We're thinking of adding that too.
We've done a bit of tracking stuff, and we're actually thinking of adding that as a watch this space type thing. For us, it's all about a venue. We really need somewhere central for us to be able to the multitude of things on our list that we want to be able to do without having to rely on asking other people if we can use hiring spaces and such. Yeah. So
dog trainers laugh.
You have to buy a big facility, farm, something. And everyone's the same. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, gotta have something to work towards. That's how you get a lot of dopamine. Well, thank you so much for your time, ladies. That's been super informative. What's your website? Do you have social media?
Yep, unpackdogtraining.com.au and Unpack Dog Training both on Facebook and Instagram. We're on Facebook a little bit more, aren't we, with that generation? We're on both of those.
That's great. I'll also link all of that in the description for everyone on the podcast. So easy access. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Great. It was really, really fun. Lovely to chat to you. Thank you. It's
lovely to meet you. So thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in studying with Therapy Dogs Australia, or you have a few more questions before deciding, please get in touch with us by emailing courses@therapydog.com.au or visiting our website at www.therapydog.com.au for more information and FAQs.